This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning and welcome to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. I'm Ann Holliday with Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And if you're with us on Facebook Live, you can see that we have lots of plants here. Bob brought in lots of plants. We're going to be talking about them. But you can also give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com. And like I said, we're on Facebook Live. It's facebook.com/WESB1075, and you can ask us a question there. And last week, we had lots and lots of people asking us questions, so many that I even missed one.
Oh, So
Bob is going to answer that question now. It's from Kara, and she had a question about?
About a weed, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have an invasive, succulent-looking weed that has invaded our raised garden bed, and we have used weed killer, and it keeps coming back. I'm pretty sure I know what it is because it's real common. It's one of those summer weeds. Not all weeds start to grow in the spring. Some wait till the summer to start to grow. And a succulent one in this area is called purslane, which is really closely related to the portulaca that you buy to plant in your flower beds or container. Pretty blooming, succulent looking plant, purslane, portulaca. But the weed is called purslane, and it's very, very difficult to get rid of because most people really don't notice it until it starts to bloom. And it has little tiny yellow flowers. And of course, once it starts to bloom, it starts to make seeds, and each plant can produce 1,000 seeds. So if you let it go to flower and go to seed, those seeds, of course, are going to be even worse than before. You know, instead of one plant, now you may have dozens or even more. And those seeds can remain in the soil for years, waiting for that perfect time to germinate and become a full-fledged plant. So the best way to get rid of them is before they flower, you have to pull them. Now you have to get way down the stem right at the ground level to pull them. They don't have a real big root system. Matter of fact, the best time to pull them is after a rain when the ground is loose, and that goes for all weeds. If it doesn't rain, then you can go out and water that area the night before and then go out the next day and reach way down to the ground level, maybe even a little bit deeper, and just pull it straight up, and it should come roots and all. Now, one other thing that you can do is there are what they call pre-emergent herbicides.
Uh-huh.
And one of the real common one is Preen. It has a chemical in it called Halts. And what that does is once that chemical gets wet, it forms a barrier around the seed coats that doesn't let them get enough oxygen and water to germinate. So it covers them up so that they finally suffocate and die off. Now, it's not going to hurt any other plants. You can apply Preen at any time. It doesn't hurt any plant that's growing. It only stops weed seeds or seeds, any seed really, from germinating. It does not hurt the plant. So you can even apply that after you've planted. But another key thing with it is that Halts in the Preen is very delicate to light. So it doesn't want to be under light very long. If you read the instructions carefully, you'll see as soon as you spread it, you have to rake it in or really wet it in so it goes a little bit below the surface so it's not exposed to the sunlight, because the sunlight will make it inactive. So you've wasted your time then. So just remember to follow the instructions as close as you possibly can.
Okay.
And that will help you. It probably won't stop at all. There are some that will escape the herbicide, or even escape the ones that you had pulled, because those seeds have probably been there a year, two, three, 4 years, and some of those are going to come back. But with patience, you just reach down there and pull them every chance you get, and you will eventually take control of it.
All right. And that's preen, is P-R-E-E-N?
Yes.
Okay. But just go to Worth Smith and
yeah,
and they can help you
sure.
with it. Okay.
You betcha.
And so we're going to talk about tomatoes now.
Yeah.
Stephanie has a problem with, it looks like a fungus to me, so, but I'm not the expert, so.
And it is a fungus.
Okay.
And
if you haven't seen, there's a post at facebook.com/WESB1075 with the picture of the exact tomato that we're talking about. So
yeah, and it's a perfect picture and perfect example of the problem. And a lot of people call it blossom end rot or cat facing. They're both the same thing. And it can be a little complicated. So what's happening in your plant? And back up a bit, Bob. You're going to go on the internet and they're going to say, add calcium. Your plant needs more calcium. But Bob's here to tell you, no, you don't. We have clay-based soil, there's lots of calcium in it. So what's really happening is as your plant is growing, calcium is very, very important to build the shell around each cell in the plant. So as your plant's growing, sometimes it's not getting enough calcium up to the plant due to you forgot to water one day, or you overwatered for a time, and so the plant can't draw that natural calcium up to supply all the parts of the plant that's growing. Or you fertilize the bejeepers out of your tomato plant, like sometimes I do, and so you forced it into growing so fast that it can't supply enough calcium, even though it's there, it can't supply enough calcium to all the new leaves. So it's important that once you start seeing fruit start to set, you should kind of slack off on the fertilizers. It's going to help. Now, some fertilizers do have calcium in it, but not enough, because the tomato plant can grow very, very fast. And so it's trying to take some of the calcium from some parts of the plant to supply them to the new parts. That's the key. That's the most important part of the plant, the new part. And in doing so, now the fruit is lacking in the calcium. So it gives this, the fungus a chance to go into the fruit. And of course, gravity takes it to the bottom, and there it starts to grow because it doesn't have enough calcium to surround those cells to protect them. And, the fungus grows there. Now, another thing that can happen is if a bee, tomatoes are usually wind pollinated, but a lot of bees and flies and so on also help pollinate them. So if that bee is out there pollinating your plant while it's wet still early in the morning, and it gets fungus on it from somewhere else, it can be the ground, it can be another plant, can be just in the air, and then pollinates that flower. Well, of course, that fungus is going to go directly into that flower, which will then be in that fruit.
That's really interesting.
So sometimes you can control it by making sure that you water correctly. Keep your tomato plant moist. Don't overwater it, though. Don't soak it. Don't over-fertilize it after it starts setting fruit to keep it growing bigger and bigger. Can correct that problem of cat facing. Or the other thing is to, a lot of times it's just the first few fruits that will have that problem, because they developed at a time when the plant was in its most active growing time. So usually two or three of those lower fruits will get the cat facing, and then from there on in, the rest of the plant will not get it. Now, should you pick it off? That was another one of her questions. I would. Yes. As soon as you see that. Now, if you don't see it and it gets ripe, it's okay. Just cut off that part. It's not going to harm you at all.
Okay.
But if you do see it early, especially when the tomato fruit is still green, pick it off, because that will allow a lot of that energy to go into other parts of the plant and the calcium that it needs to go into the other parts of the plant. So get rid of it as soon as you see it. That'll help strengthen the rest of the plant and, again, give that extra boost of calcium that it needs. So, again, going out there and spraying calcium on the leaves or putting lime on the soil because there's calcium in lime is really not a good idea. I don't know why they keep preaching that. It's not a good idea. Tomato plants like acidic soil. Lime changes the soil from acidic to alkaline. That stresses the plant even more in the future. So I really don't recommend adding lime at all or spraying lime on it at all, because you're kind of wasting your time.
Okay. All right. You heard it here. So if you have a question for Bob about tomatoes or anything else in your lawn and garden, give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. We are live right there. And you can ask a question there. And Kara is who had the question about the succulent weeds is on right now. She says, good morning, Bob.
Oh, good morning.
And Kara, if you didn't hear the answer to your question, as soon as this is over, look at the video. He answered your question first.
Yeah.
So, and Bob also brought in a tomato plant.
Yes.
So if you haven't seen like a live tomato plant, this is what they look like.
And I wanted to show you something special about this tomato plant.
Okay.
That I'm ashamed to say I just recently discovered that because at Graham's greenhouse, they do it all the time. Bill does a lot of the leftover tomato plants. He'll put in the small containers. This is a small container here. It's probably only a 6-inch container, and leaves them in the greenhouse for all the employees to pick tomatoes that don't have one at home, and sometimes customers too. But I've noticed, and shame on me, I should have noticed this many years ago, that being in these small containers forces the plant to fruit very quickly. It puts it under stress. And that's, you've probably heard me say that tomato plants need to be under a little bit of stress to help them produce the fruit. That gives them the signal that, holy mackerel, I'm under stress. I may not live as long as I should. So I better set fruit now so I can pass on my seeds for the next generation. So sometimes when you stress a plant to this point to where it's too small of a container to really be grown in, it's going to dwarf the plant, but it's going to produce fruit earlier and ripen much earlier.
That's why this one is red a little bit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we have many, many down there that have been ripe for weeks already.
Wow.
So my point is, if you want to be the first one to pick a tomato on your block, and that's my goal all of the time, is plant your tomatoes the regular way in the garden or big containers, a 5-gallon bucket or bigger, where they get nice and big and grow. But plant one in a really small container, and it will force it to fruit and ripen earlier, so that you can have that tomato earlier than everybody else.
That is a really good tip.
Yeah. And that happens with a lot of plants. When you put them under that kind of stress, you've restricted the root system. You can't give it enough water, that it sends a signal. I know it sounds like I'm saying that the plant has a brain and it's thinking. In a way, it does. It has all the cells and neutrons and all that we have in our brain. It's just that theirs is scattered all through the whole plant. It's not in one area. So it sends that signal to that plant that I got to hurry up and fruit and ripen to pass on my genes to the next generation.
Neat.
Yeah.
All right. That is so cool. So I bet you a lot of people are going to have like small containers for the tomato plants next year.
I think it'd be a great idea. That's why patio tomatoes are real popular. They're in a smaller container.
Okay.
And they grow well and not as big as they would in the garden, but grow well and ripen and produce a lot of fruit early, very early.
Okay. Well, we are going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, and we will be right back.
Get going on your outdoor projects now with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find a big supply of culvert pipe, 6-inch to 36-inch diameters and 20-foot lengths, perfect for drains, driveways, and other drainage uses. Worth Smith in Bradford also has plenty of railroad ties and patio blocks, as well as plastic and steel barrels for dozens of uses. And if your outdoor activities include camping or cooking out, you'll find what you need from charcoal to mountain pie makers. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. We are live right there. And Bob, he brought in the tomato plant, but he also brought in some more plants.
Yep, I did. And you heard me mention, I think, last week, you know, the more you know about a plant, and one of the more fascinating things for me is the history of a plant, the more you can appreciate them. And these couple plants I have in front of me are hostas. I've always found it very, very fascinating because I've researched a lot of the history. Now, that was, the hosta originally came from China. And that's a whole neat story, too, that I'm going to tell someday about a special plant explorer. But came from China and was the very first imported perennial planted in America in Salem, Massachusetts. And that original plant still remains there growing very well. So that tells me the hostas are a very, very long-lived perennial. Not all perennials live a long, long life. Some of them only for a year, like the mullein that we talked about last week, and some only for a few years. But the hosta seems to just have no lifespan at all, grows forever. And in my grandmother's time, I can remember working in the garden with her, and she called them Funkia, their original name. The botanist just could not figure out where this plant belonged. Was it in the rose family? Was it in the pea family? They just could not figure it out. So somehow it got the name Funkia off a plant explorer. His name was Mr. Funk. And botanists started studying it more, and they came up with the idea. And my mom then called it a plantain lily. So it became in the lily family for many, many years. And botanists continued to dig into it until they found out, no, it's not in the lily family. It's in a family all its own. It doesn't belong. It's not a cousin to anybody. So they had to give it a new name. And, of course, they ended up giving it the name of the explorer that found it, Mr. Host. So it became known as hosta in a family all its own. So I just found it interesting how plants can change their name and how we've misnamed them for a while, but nowadays, we can, through DNA and so on, we can put them in the correct family. So it began with my grandma calling it the Funkia, my mom calling it the plantain lily, and I call it the hosta. I wonder what the next generation will call it. But the reason I brought these two plants in is to show you what we normally think of as the hosta is a great big leaf plant that can grow just about anywhere and is extremely hardy. That's why they're so popular, is anybody can plant one of these and grow them. They grow in the sun. They grow in the shade. They grow in a dry area. They grow in a wet area. They're great for planting under trees because they don't have much of a root system, so they don't disturb the tree roots. The tree roots don't disturb them. But what also is fascinating to me is the variety of hostas out there. This one here, it's a young one, but this is one of those ones that's going to grow 2 foot tall, 3-4 foot wide. The one beside it is a dwarf hosta, one that a lot of people mess out on because they think, I don't want one of those big hostas that puts up those real tall spikes and They look ugly, and I got to clip them off all the time. The dwarf hosta. This one here is called Ginkgo Craig. It's not going to get more than 3 or 4 inches tall and probably only about a foot and a half wide.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if that shows up or not, but it does have a flower spike. And the flowers are going to be very, very low. They're not going to be tall stems that are going to stick up there and wave around in the wind, although I kind of like that for a couple reasons. Hummingbirds just love the hosta flower, and the hosta flower most of the time gives off a terrific amount of scent. So you not only get a pretty hardy plant, but you also get a nice scent, and you get to watch the hummingbirds. They really, in my yard, look for them every year. As soon as they start opening, all the hummingbirds flock to that area. That must be the nectar in the hosta is just a little bit better than what I put in the feeder even.
You know, I was just going to say that my grandma never had a hummingbird feeder. She didn't need one because she had hostas all over the place. Hosta lilies, she used to call them.
Hosta lilies, yeah. That's right. That was another name. They were called Funkia and Plantain Lily, then Hosta Lily, and now just hosta. But so there are the real short flowering ones, even not just in the dwarfs, but also in the larger leaf ones. And then there's the tall flowering ones. And I think both of them have a place in the garden somewhere. So remember, when you're looking for the hosta, don't think, well, I don't want one of them tall stems. And when it's done flowering, it's ugly. Well, you just clip off the stems, you know. It's no big deal. A pair of scissors will clip them all off. And just about every color you can see. Now, some people are going to say, well, I planted them, but the deer eat them. Well, there are ways to deter the deer from them, too. Several different ways. You know, if you look it up, there are a lot of scents out there that you can place around that keep the deer away. There are other plants that can be a companion to the hosta that helps keep the deer away. But there's a lot of ways to keep the deer away.
That little one, can you grow that inside or does it have to be outside?
Has to be outside. Okay. Just about all the perennials. They really need fresh air. I know that sounds bad to some people. Say, well, I got fresh air in my house. No, you don't. You've got so many gases in your house. It's incredible. From your furniture, from the wood, from your carpets, from everything. And perennials and trees got to have the outside air and the different temperature fluctuations to really grow well. They need to have that warm day and cool night, dry day and then wet day. They also, many of them have to have that freezing winter to go into dormancy so that they can rest, because if they didn't rest, they would just wear themselves out. So a lot of these things, they have to be outdoors.
Okay.
Now, there are some plants. There are exceptions to the rules that make great houseplants, too. But the hosta is not one of them.
All right. So I suggest that the people who own buildings around me plant hostas for me. Thank you.
Yeah. Like I say, they'll grow anywhere. Just anywhere. There's been times where working in a person's yard, I had dug the hostas out that they didn't want anymore. And you kind of toss them out into the woods or a back lot, and you go back a year or two later, and there they are growing. Never planted, just tossed back there. They're extremely hardy. So they're a good perennial to have.
Okay. And gosh, this half hour has gone by so fast, but Bob, you did want to talk about, you have a follow-up for your garden finds.
Oh, yeah, I do. I do. I'm looking right at it here. I brought in a bunch of my finds there a few weeks ago, marbles and gold chains and rings and all that, and cannonballs.
Hand grenades,
yeah. But the one thing I forgot about that happens to be my favorite find of all time, a customer of mine and a good friend of mine had a stone wall in his backyard, and he wanted the stone wall removed so that he could extend his backyard. And so removing that stone wall was a tough job. It was a hard job. At the very bottom, I found a stone, and as I tipped it over, there was a face looking at me. So I kind of cleaned it off as best I could and said, my gosh, this is pretty neat. This was a hand-carved stone. I said, boy, but it looks like it may have been a headstone. So I had to talk to the homeowner. Said, is there any chance that there was a cemetery here? He says, oh, absolutely not. But he says, I do think I know where it came from. You know, his father had somehow worked at the cemetery or did some work up there. And once in a while, they would have a mistake, a stone that the carver was making, and it just didn't turn out right for some reason. And you could see this one here, where the carver was doing a great job, then all of a sudden stopped. You can see it wasn't finished. And so he said, yeah, you're welcome to it. I took it home. It has a prominent spot in my garden, but it's Mary. And it's Mary looking down to her left, as a symbol way back would always be the symbol of Mary looking down to the left. So it she's always looking down at my garden and protecting it all the time. So that was probably the best find I ever had.
That is the coolest thing. That is the coolest thing. And if you didn't see his other finds, you can find, it's not a video of the whole show, but it is a video of his garden finds. You can find it at facebook.com/WESB1075. And gosh, Bob, we're out of time already.
Oh boy.
But this show went by fast. We will be here next week, and we might even be talking about some new bees.
Yeah.